はい。じゃあ今日ゲストは、たこ焼き仮面こと、アロン・ピルソン。
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.、
You just finished your talk?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Is it the first time you delivered the whole talk in Japanese?
No, this is the fourth time.
Fourth?
Yeah, fourth、okay. time.、Mm-hmm. The first time was in Sapporo.、
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was 2 years ago?
Was that 2 years ago? No.
I think it was.
Was it? Maybe、mm. it was.、Mm. Yeah, when it was the... Yeah, 2 years ago when Ruby Kaigi took a break.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was a really great talk, and your Japanese got so improved, maybe.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm so impressed.
Oh, thank you. I've been practicing a long time.
Yeah.
the first time I did it in Sapporo, it didn't go so well. I thought...so I couldn't make it the first time I was supposed to give a 40-minute talk.
Yeah.
But I accidentally, like, I just went too fast and it went down to 20 minutes. It's way too fast.
Yeah.
So I felt a bit better about the time this time.
Yeah, I think it was 30-minute talk and then you finished it almost right on time and still have a slot for questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you think those dajale and jokes by yourself?
Yes.
That was really hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to keep thinking. I was like, I was planning the talk, and I'm like, I gotta think. So whenever I give a talk in English, I always make dajare. But, but of course, it doesn't translate. Like, you can't translate those. So yeah. I was like, I gotta come up with some dajare in Japanese.
Yeah.
So I just kept thinking and thinking, and finally... Finally got something.
Yeah. Most of the dajare were pretty spot on.
So oh, thanks.
Raku wa raku janai.
Raku janai.
Kodo na kodo.
Kodo na kodo, yeah. Well, I tweeted that one. I was like, so I'd try them out. I have to try them out because, like, I don't know if it'll sit very well、
yeah.
because Japanese is my second language, right? So I don't know if it sits well. So I was trying it out. Like, I tweeted them.、
Yeah.
So I tweeted, like, kodo na kodo. And Nakamura-san was like, Nakamura Usa, he was like, oh, everybody says that.
I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And the other one is not dajare. It was maybe your talk will be published later on the site as an archive.One of the was showing a graph of the performance improvements, and you show a、yeah. graph of the y-axis with the weird scale, so that it's actually a tiny improvements, but it, on the graph it looks like a huge improvement.
Huge improvements, yes, but it's not. 、yeah.
That's actually a common technique used in Japanese TV shows and media.
They make
like a huge, you know, kind of confusing graph.
Oh, yeah, it happens in the U.S. media, too,
yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know, if you read it closely, you can figure it out, but it's still, I don't like it when people do that.
Yeah. So that was really funny.
But it's good to use as humor, especially if you point it out, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, exactly. So your talk was about improving the performance for Rails.
Yes.
So is Rails 4.2...currently in beta testing?
Yeah, it's currently in beta. I mean, we're gonna release it as soon as possible. We're trying to work out any show-stopping bugs that people have reported.
Yeah.
So we've got a few. So the date's not completely set, but it should be, you know,
later this year?
Yeah, oh, weeks? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely this year, just we don't know exactly the date.
Okay.
So...
And one of the other things you and other members for the Rails have done for 4.2 is to speed up Active Record.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that project was called Adequate Record.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. Basically, I've had an idea. So I had an idea for speeding up Active Record for a very long time. I don't know, maybe that project, I've been working on that project for maybe 3 years or so. And what it is basically is like, all it is just every time we generate a query,
SQL query.
Yeah, SQL query. A SQL query, what it would do is it would create a, or what Active Record would do is it would create an AST representing the SQL query, then it would compile the SQL query into the actual string, then it would send the query to the database. And the problem is, like, if you look at the queries in your system, many times are very similar. Like, it's the same, you're just doing the same query over and over again, but we always have to do that same process over and over again, create the tree and then compile it to the SQL statement. So what this project was is basically to make it so that we only do that compilation step once.
Right.
So you compile it down into the string, and then we cache that, and then every subsequent time, we just reuse that thing. So we don't have to do the compilation step anymore. So that's what the project was.
How was the progress? Is it already merged to 4.2?
Oh, yeah. It's actually been in master for a while.
Yeah. Okay. So what's the cache, when you cache those queries, what's the cache key? Is it?
That is a good question. So the cache key depends, well, the cache key is basically the table along with, or the model, along with the parameters for the query. So, like, if you do user dot find by name, then the cache key will be user and name. And if you do, like, user dot find by name and, you know, whatever, it'll be a combination of those things.
Okay.
So that's what we use for the keys.
So if you have the same method call on, for example, user model in different places in the controller, they will share just one cache.
If it's the same, so if they're always doing find by name, it'll be the same cache. Yeah.
But if you like chain those active relation,
yeah. So that's one limitation. That's one limitation of the cache is if you do something like user dot where name dot where ID dot where, and you keep chaining stuff onto that, it's much more difficult to cache, and we don't have a cache for that in place. Though it is, so that's actually one of the plans I have for the future. Is it's possible to cache those types of queries. And if you look at adequate records implementation, it's actually just using those .where chains. It's using those and caching those. So it's possible to cache those, except that right now you have to have a specific block. So you say, like, okay, cache this thing. So we do that under the hood in Active Record, but we want to come up with the future plans is to come up with something more automatic. Right, so you can continue to just use your same code, and it'll just get faster.
No, cool.
So,
how's the actual improvements? Did you measure it?
So it depends. Like, when you measure, just measuring something like very simple micro benchmarks, doing find by name or find by whatever, we'll see something like a two times or more increase. As far as like. It'll actually go above two times, but we're seeing on average two times faster. And if you look at, it's hard to gauge that impact on an overall system because it depends. I mean, we don't know what queries you're doing in your system, so it's hard to say. But I did measure it against just a scaffold-based, scaffold Rails application, and we saw on the scaffold maybe 10 to 15% throughput improvement.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 10% better on scaffolding seems
good.
Yeah.
Nobody will complain about the performance increase.
No, as Matt was saying.
They get for free.
Yeah, exactly.
I have this problem with Rails. It's 20% faster.
Yeah, it's too fast. What do we do to slow it down?
It's interesting that the name, Adequate Record. When we see the gems and extension to Rails, I think it's being like something like active something.
Yeah.
Active queue, active model. And then recently with Rails 4, DHH started some other extension, which is enabled by default, like tuple links and strong parameters. It's like really shiny, strong, tuple, fast.
Yes.
And then you like adequate record. So it's really like humble. Like modest expression. That's the
Yeah, I don't know. I'm tired. So I don't know. I'm just tired of turbo, active, all this stuff. I'm like, come on. It's just code. It's just code. Like, seriously.
What about like Lightning Record?
Yes,
like,
Lightning Record. I just want, like, I wanted to name it. The reason I named it that is because, I mean, I think everybody sees those names, and they, you know, after a while, they think it's just a name, right? So I wanted to use that name because then everybody, you know, now we all know, yeah. We all know that it's just a name. Like,
yeah. Adequate record. What's next for active record?
Well, doing that caching I was talking about there. Other things I want to do are like the stuff I'm working on at Red Hat. We have some extensions to Active Record that I want to start pushing upstream. But yeah. To be honest, most of them are Postgres specific. But I don't know, things like it's weird. We don't have. I didn't realize this, but apparently Rails by default uses 32-bit integers on Postgres.
Okay.
So you have to specifically say like I want a 64-bit integer column, and I don't know why I do know why now. We started out with 32-bit.
Yeah.
And the problem is like when we dump the schema, so if you look at the schema RB, we use integers for the column, the primary key column. But if I remember correctly, in the schema RB we don't say the type. Right. If it's an integer, it won't say int. It'll just say this is the primary key. Mm. So we have to start dumping that information. Otherwise, it'll mess up when people upgrade.
Is that translate to big int on the database level?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I remember that. I wanted to do the big int for MySQL driver, and then by default, it's 32-bit. Mm-hmm. So I had to basically, at the time, maybe it was 3 years ago, so maybe it has been improved. But at the time, what I needed to do was start with the integer, and then right immediately after, I issue auto table with the database migration.
Change to 30 or change to 64 big int. Yeah. So I think what we need to do is we need to start. I mean, the first step is we need to start dumping all of the information in the schema RB, not just including the primary key type.
Right.
So once we do that, then we can have people use big ints, and then it'll upgrade correctly.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, I had Matsuda-san on my show, and then the thing we talked about is Active Record is in Rails core, but that's one of the areas that quite clearly lack the maintenance. For example, MySQL, Postgres, like you mentioned. Now that you joined the Red Hat and probably do some Rails work there, do we expect a little more improvements on enhancing Active Record much better?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as we get, it just depends on what I can pull out of the application that we have at work. But yeah, I mean, I keep working on it. I've been pairing with a woman named Eileen. Yeah. She's Eileen Codes on Twitter. Okay. We've been working together on internal, like improvement to internals. Mm-hmm. Guy named Sean Griffin, he's been working on a lot of stuff too. So, I mean, actually, one interesting thing that he did was he's been changing the typecasting code internally, so we can support arbitrary types a lot more easily. Mm-hmm. So it's easier to support things like Postgres's JSON, JSON types,
HStore types.
Array types too.
H-store.
Yep, exactly. Any of those, it's easy to add any of those custom types now. So cool. I think that's a pretty big improvement. Although I have to admit, most of the features or most of the improvements that I've seen are from the Postgres side.
Right.
Like, I haven't seen much going on the MySQL side.
Yeah. But okay.
I think it would be cool if we had better GIS support.
Geo information?
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be huge, yeah.
I think it would be really interesting. I don't know. We're not doing any geo stuff at work, so.
Yeah. is that an area that developers can contribute a lot if they want to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Especially with this new typecasting system that's in there. It should be really easy to start adding geotypes to it.
Cool. Great. So the other thing you mentioned was the rack. Rakujanai. So yeah, you just announced, it was actually announced on the mailing list, so it's public, but rack development is going to fade away. It's not going away. The actual code will be there for a long time.
Yeah.
But the rack 2.0 will not happen as rack it is today. And
yes.
There's going to be a lot of experiments on what RAC 2.0 is going to be like, and you started this experimental project for that.
Yes. Yeah. So I started a project called The Metal, which is an experimental version of RAC 2.0. So basically what happened was is most of the RAC team was like, well, I don't, you know, they move on to other projects, or like it's improving the current API just is too hard. Mm. I mean, that the main problem is we have like this the env hash, the rack env hash.
Yeah.
And if you look at, for example, hijack API, the hijack API was like, okay, we're just going to put a special key inside the hash. And it's not very extendable.
Right.
So what I want to do is basically switch it to more object type, like, I think what we should be doing is we should be taking advantage of Ruby's OO. Ruby's so strong with OO, we should be leveraging that for our web applications. So that's basically my idea with this, or with The Metal, is basically start using more objects.
Yeah.
And eventually, I want The Metal to just die. I want that to go away. I want it to become Rack 2.0, so Rack will just continue.
Okay.
I mean, for now, I've taken over maintenance of Rack 1X, and we'll keep working on that, fixing bugs and releasing it and stuff. But I want to be the one driving 2.0. Yeah. So, I mean, Rack wa Raku janai to yuta kedo, mirai wa aru to omou.
Mirai wa aru.
Yeah.
That's good. Rack hijack, I think, was it to jailbreak out of the rack environments and do whatever they want with the server adapter directly?
Yeah, it's supposed to give you access to the output socket IO.
Mm-hmm. Was it to implement something like WebSocket or HTTP 2.0?
Yeah. So if you look at, there's a gem called Fay, which supports, or it's a WebSocket implementation for rack, and it uses the hijack API to just deal with the socket directly. So I want to do I want to make it so that you can deal with the socket. Well, excuse me, not deal with the socket directly, but deal with something that looks like an IO. Right. So maybe under the hood, it's not actually you may not actually have direct access to the socket itself, but it'll look like it from an API standpoint.
Yeah. One of the things I liked about Rack was, It's really simple.
Yes.
It's an env. You might think it looks like a global variable. I think indeed it is. But it's an env hash, and then all of the variables you need, it's already in there. And you can pull out all of the information you need and then return in an array, the status code, the headers, and body. I think that's a great idea, simple idea that's taken out of Python's whiskey, I think. And when I look at the metal, just like you said, it's based on the object model, and it requests object and response object. It's kind of like more like Node.js.
Yes.
Yeah. So did you take an inspiration from there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So basically, I mean, don't tell anybody this. I used to be a J2EE developer.
Oh.
But basically, I thought it was weird going from J2EE to Rails, and then, you know, Rails was great, and then we started using this env hash stuff in Rack, and I'm like, this is terrible. This is a step backwards from what I was doing in J2EE. Yeah. And then came along Node with, Node has a request and a response object, not only do they have a request and response object, but the API is dead simple. Mm. It's a very simple API. So the way I looked at theirs was basically servlet containers, but simple, like completely simplified. And I'm like, this is perfect. I don't want to know this giant. We shouldn't have to know this giant API.
Yeah.
Node has enough. It has everything we need and none of the other stuff. And I think we should just steal from it.
Cool. Yeah. When I first looked at request and response object, I immediately thought about sublet APIs, the hundreds of methods that adapters need to implement.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that at all. Yeah, so the point is, like, I love Node's API. It's terrible. I'm a Rails developer. I'm saying this. I love Node's API, and I want to steal from it. I mean, it's important for us to be looking at other stuff and stealing from them. So I want to steal from that, but I also want to make sure that it's going to work well with HTTP2.
Yeah.
So that's another focus of the project, is like, how can we make sure that, like, I want to make sure that what we release or what Rack 2.0 becomes works very well with 1.1 servers.
Yeah.
Because that's what we have now. That's what we have to deal with today. Most of the servers are going to be 1.1 for a long time.
Right.
But I want to make sure that we can extend it to 2.0 servers easily, because that 2.0 is the future.
What's the current target you want to work with in terms of the server implementation? I think, like, one of the most popular server implementations would be Unicorn and Puma and Thin. Are you targeting some of those or those as the experiment with the metal goes?
Sure. I've already targeted Unicorn and Puma and Webrick. So I have those three. Those three are working right now. I haven't dealt with Thin yet. I'm not sure. I mean, for me, Thin will probably be a best effort, because I usually use Puma or Unicorn and possibly Passenger, but I think the Fusion guys will probably, hopefully they'll take care of that for me.
When I looked at Lock Hijack, I think it was targeting Thin as well.
Was it?
Maybe. Thin actually has a secret key in the end, Thin.async or something, to implement WebSocket, something like that, way before Lock Hijack did.
I didn't know that. Yeah. See, this is what I'm saying about the env hash. There's secret key, like secret keys. Why do we have secret keys? It should just be methods. Come on.
Yeah. Cool. When you implement like those asynchronous implementation for HTTP2 WebSocket, what's going to be, I mean, these servers have a different event model. Puma will run great on JVM with native threads and everything, and then Thin has this event machine under the hood, and Unicorn is mostly worker-based pre-forking servers. When you implement real-time those APIs on top of the Rack 2.0 or the metal, what's your approach would be?
So I think for now, I mean, this is getting into really like a gray area, because I'm not totally sure. This is why I'm making an experimental. This is why it's experimental. But right now, what I have in mind basically is, say, depending on the HTTP 2.0 semantics, like the different types of the different ways that your application can be served, we'll just have, you'll provide an object to the server, and that object has methods that the server might call given the particular events in each for HTTP 2.0. So probably, like, if you provide an object that only responds to call, which is the current the current one, then we'll assume that your app is an HTTP 1.1.1.1 app. But if you respond to these other things, then we'll upgrade you to a 2.2. Right. Yeah. So that's like very gray plan, but
interesting. How, if the listener sort of interested in contributing to the metal, what's the great place to start?
Study HTTP 2.0 and figure out how we can handle that well.
Okay.
Because that's where I need the most help. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Right. Do you have any other things to talk about? Want to talk?
I don't know. That's all. Web server の話をしたい。
Mats is here.
You're not a web guy at all?
No.
Oh, okay. I guess I'm a web guy. What should we talk about? We talked about Active Record. We talked about the metal. Ah, I'll tell you why I called it the metal.
Yep.
Okay, so the reason...
I think the metal is already used in the RAL's terminology.
Yes, there's metal. Like action controller metal, yeah. So the reason, well, this is a totally separate thing, so I called it the metal. That's the whole name for it. And the reason I did that is so that if you have fewer middleware, then your code is closer to the metal.
The metal.
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, it is a stupid joke.
Stupid joke, but used everywhere.
Yes,
Rails uses action control metal to...
I know. Why? Why do they say closer to the metal? Aren't you closer to silicon? It doesn't make sense. I don't know any metal in there. Yeah. It's like a very tiny amount of metal in there. Why would you say that?
Yeah. Yeah, Apple has released the iOS 8 API to the graphics library for the Apple GPU, and it's called the metal as well.
The metal? Oh, yeah. Really? See, I would imagine if you're saying you're getting closer to the metal, like maybe the computer's case or something like that. Why does that even mean CPU? It doesn't make sense. I don't know where this phrase comes from.
So you dress like 80s heavy metal.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good because in English you can make so many dajare with the metal. Really, like, because you have, you know, metal like music, metal like metal, or metal just, you know, getting close to the metal, which is a CPU. There's so many different weird meanings.
Yeah.
You can check out baby metal.
Yes.
Baby metal.
Baby metal.
Baby metal.
Yes, exactly.
Close to the baby metal.
Close to the baby metal, yeah.
I think we got a title for this episode.
Close to the baby metal, perfect.
Good. Yeah. I think 30 minutes was a great episode. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're recording this? I thought it was
live. Yeah, I'm recording this and then live, and I'll post this maybe later today.
So why is it called Rebuild FM?
Good question.
Are you rebuilding FM?
Rebuilding a radio industry.
No. I see. But it's not FM, right? It's like it's podcast.
It's AM more like.
Live.
It's live.
Live, but it's on the internet. It's not FM.
So it's not FM.
Yeah, it's not FM at all.
I don't know. Yeah. So some of the podcasters started taking those domains with .fm.
Is there .am?
Yeah, there's .am.
You should get AM. Rebuild AM too. AM.
Yeah. Yeah. FM is kind of really expensive, $75 or something.
Really?
Yeah. So I was kind of hesitant to take the domain, but it's a really good domain. I like the name Rebuild. Rebuild is like you have to rebuild the database, rebuild the code, entire project to rehash everything. That was a good name.
Did you know? So I tried to register a domain name with emoji in it lately. Have you tried to do that?
Yeah, Zach has told me that he got an emoji domain with .hk or something. Yeah, it's totally doable. Yeah.
So I want to start. I've never written a programming language before, and I want to write my own. I want to write my own programming language. I want to call it Poolang.
Poolang. Yeah.
Like the emoji Poo-Lang.
Pilot Poo.
Yes, exactly. Because everybody complains about programming languages, right? So if you say, they'll be like, maybe Ruby's slow. And then you can say, well, have you looked at Poolang? That's like the worst language out there. So like anytime anybody complains about some programming language, you can say, well, just look at this one. This is the worst. So I want to try implementing the worst programming language ever. Yeah.
And my programming language is better than Poo. So.
Yes, everybody can say it. Everybody can say
it.
Yes. Yes.
Shit.
So I want to try and get poolang.org, but you can't register an emoji domain on org. Yeah, I can't find a registrar that'll
maybe
let me do it.
.io.
.io, yes. Poo.
That's a terrible joke, mate.
Poolang.io, yes. Your code is terrible. What you wrote, the input is terrible, so is the output. It works well. It works so well because you can say, well, the GC is terrible. It's Poolang. It's
a poo. But you can flash it. Flash the memory at one time.
Yeah, just absolutely, yeah. Exactly.
It's very volatile.
Yeah, yep. I mean, okay.
I should stop. Terrible jokes.
Yep. All right, that's it. Yes, so I'm announcing this. I'm announcing the development of Poolang.
Is it on GitHub?
Not yet, no. I've just been thinking about it.
Can you use emoji for a GitHub project?
Yeah, you can. I've done it.
Okay.
Yeah, it even shows. Yeah, it shows up in the URL too, so you can put an emoji in the URL. That works. But you know what doesn't work is you can't make a Ruby gem with emoji names in it. Yeah, because I tried to make so all the Ruby gems code works. Like you can package it. I made a gem called hearts, a bunch of hearts.
Yeah,
you can package the gem, but when you try to push it to rubygems.org. It rejects it.
Mm.
So the entire process up to pushing it works.
You just create as you push it, poo.rb file on the local file system, and yeah. Does it work?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah, it works fine.
Nice.
That's important.
Important. Great. Yeah, thanks for stopping by.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Enjoy your talk and have a safe trip back to
I will.
Seattle.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much.